to our Merritt case, the Ramsey case, in which we have Mr. Holder and Mr. Campbell. Mr. Holder, are you with us now?
I am.
Very good. Good afternoon.
Good
And
afternoon.
good afternoon, Mr. Campbell. Are parties ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Very good. Then you may go forward, Mr.
Thank you.
Holder.
May it please the court, my name is Josh Holder. I'm representing Mr. Ramsey in this matter. And I believe my petition argues out the details, but if I could call the court's attention on the first issue or the first prong under the Paris test, whether or not the guilty plea and the motion to withdraw were made in good faith. I really see the heart of this argument being whether counsel and defendants are reasonably allowed to look at sentencing guidelines as instructive and informative in forming decisions and weighing costs and benefits, risks and benefits of accepting a guilty plea. If because the sentencing guidelines are discretionary, if they bear absolutely no reasonableness, then you know, I can't really say that Mr. Ramsey's material mistake of fact or misleading advice would have had much difference. But I believe that we are allowed to rely upon the sentencing guidelines. They are required to be reviewed by the sentencing judges. And I believe that the advice given by counsel, based upon a miscalculation of the guidelines because of a misrepresentation or misunderstanding of a material fact, namely that his juvenile record was sealed, I believe these are things that counsel can rely upon and defendants can rely upon and should be able to rely upon in making their decisions. If we accept that premise, then certainly Mr. Ramsey had a material mistake in fact.
Mr. Holder?
Yes, Your Honor.
This is Judge Beals. Can I follow up with you on that?
Yes, Your Honor.
On the prong dealing with, of the test dealing with good faith, if the concern was that appellant's plea was entered inadvisedly due to the juvenile, his misunderstanding about the juvenile court record being available to the court in sentencing, if that was the good faith issue, he didn't understand that, how do you explain why your client never mentioned that fact when he first moved to withdraw his guilty plea at that September, I think it was 2014, September 2014 hearing?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Ramsey is not a well-spoken, articulate client, and that led to a lot of his misunderstandings to begin with. That's why he laid out everything, every reason that he could. The first time that he made mention of wanting to withdraw his guilty plea, it was a surprise to me, and it was a surprise to the court. And you know, but after speaking with him, I realized that that was the misunderstanding, and that's why I clarified it for the court. That you know, that was the basis of you know our entire decision in our discussions in whether or not to accept the guilty plea.
Well, on the second prong of the test under Paris, the reasonable defense standard, and I may be getting ahead of you there, and if so, I'm sorry, I apologize, but time goes by so fast when you're arguing these. Why were there no affidavits put forward or any witnesses named in support of the proffer of what a reasonable defense would be here?
Judge, it was the difficulty in locating some of these witnesses. We had the one witness that was in the vehicle with Mr. Ramsey. I even alleged to it in the record as being his girlfriend. They lived together. I was able to find her, but my understanding in court is that the court was going to allow a proffer of the defense instead, and that's what we did. We had at least one witness available to call, but the court had indicated they would allow a proffer, so I proffered.
So basically, just you said that's the only one I could find, and so that's why there are no other witnesses mentioned, listed, or affidavits.
Judge, at the time, yes, sir. We've since located some of these people, but that's the only one at the time. And as to his reasonable and substantial defense, I believe my client's testimony. He's not the most articulate client. That he was not at the scene. He did not break into the house. He was sitting around a corner. Didn't do justice to the full story as given to the detectives. As I later proffered, he had absolutely no knowledge of what was going on at the time he was around the corner. He was just sitting in a car when Almonte Ramsey comes back, his cousin, comes back with a bag full of stuff. So, his defense is not only that he was just around the corner, but as I proffered, he had no clue what was going on until it was too late. And Mr. Ramsey comes back with a bag full of goods. There's a lot more information that's not on the record. I don't want to go into that, but, that's the gist of it. So I believe that Mr. Ramsey does have a substantial and reasonable defense. And even as the court pointed out, I know that principals in the secondary can be charged and tried as a principal in the first, but the fact that he might be guilty of any other crime or additional crime or alternative crime is certainly a defense to a burglary charge if he's if he was found merely to be guilty of, receiving the stolen property at a later date or, accessory after the fact and trying to get rid of all of that may be well and good. That would have to go to trial, but that is a defense in and of itself to principal in the first degree. With regard to the third prong, the third subset of my argument that the prejudice to the Commonwealth, here I know the court alluded to prejudice to the Commonwealth. The Commonwealth attorney alluded to prejudice, but there was never any proffer made of any actual prejudice. The Commonwealth attorney never contacted its witnesses, never proffered that they ever tried to contact their witnesses, that their witnesses were uncooperative. They simply said they might be. It's a speculative statement that the Commonwealth made. They argued that that he had not spoken with the civilian witness since August 12th of 2013, but couldn't imagine that her ambivalence towards testifying had changed. That's not evidence. That's not even a proper proffer of evidence. That's a subjective standard. So I don't believe that, and certainly there was nothing preventing the Commonwealth from bringing charges that had been null prossed back. These charges had not been dismissed with prejudice. They were null processed.
Was one of the charges a misdemeanor?
One of the charges was a misdemeanor.
And that would be fine. And I'm sorry, I should have said, this is Dr. O'Brien. I should have told you who you were speaking to. And that charge would not be able to be brought back. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay.
My understanding is, I will
say 1 year statute of limitation.
There is a 1 year statute of limitations. I don't know. I've never researched the issue as to whether there was any tolling of that. But while the charge is pending, because they certainly initiated the charge within the 1 year, I've never researched the issue of any tolling of that. But certainly that would be the only charge that potentially would have been barred. The other felonies there were no statute of limitations attached to those that would have barred them from being brought back. So, Your Honor, with that, unless there's any other questions, I really think the heart of this issue is our ability to rely upon sentencing guidelines to make decisions in good faith. And if counsel and defense can do that, then certainly Mr. Ramsey was under a material mistake of fact and got bad advice from counsel.
Thank you, Mr. Holder. Are there any other questions?
None from me. Thank you.
No further questions.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Campbell.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Aaron Campbell on behalf of the Commonwealth. We would submit that the trial court did not abuse its discretion in the two dispositive issues is the good faith ruling and the ruling on whether the defendant had a reasonable defense to present. As to the good faith ruling, it's important to remember that this is a factual finding that the trial court made, and it's under an abuse of discretion standard. And I think what the trial court was looking at was this defendant was merely looking at the consequences of his plea rather than proving his innocence. And given that the amount of time that passed, his many explanations for withdrawing it, I think this factual finding is supported by the record. The appellant, his argument is that this miscalculation in the sentencing guidelines should be enough to meet the good faith requirement. The Commonwealth is concerned about that argument because frequently sentencing guidelines change from the time that the defendant enters a plea and the time they get to formal sentencing. And if we allow defendants to withdraw guilty pleas based on the fact that the sentencing guidelines may have be changed through the pre-sentence report, I think it would set a bad precedent. In this case, the defendant knew that his sentence could be above the guidelines, and that's essentially what happened, is that his sentence just ended up being more than the guidelines that he thought the guidelines were going to be. If there are no questions on that prong, I'll just move on to my second argument. Even if you accept the good faith element, the appellant didn't have a reasonable defense sustained by proof. Generally, it's almost like a two-part test, is that the defendant has to present a argument that's based on a proposition of law. For example, like the Justice case where the defendant couldn't be guilty for breaking into her own home, or the defendant has to present credible testimony supported by affidavits. I don't think either of those were met in this case. The Commonwealth had an eyewitness that placed the defendant in the home of the house that was being burglarized. And the defendant said they proffered a defense that he was simply around the corner, and the trial court found that wasn't really a reasonable defense because he could be guilty of principal and second degree. But even so, he hasn't presented any credible testimony supported by any affidavits. He hasn't presented any testimony from this girlfriend, just this sort of simple proffer. I think there has to be more than just the proffer that they gave, because otherwise this court can't, there has to be some sort of credibility determination. I don't think this court can make that credibility determination. If there are no questions, I'll just ask that the court affirm.
Can you address, I'd like to follow up on Judge O'Brien's question. This is Judge Beals.
Sure.
On the question on the prong of dealing of the test dealing with prejudice. And I guess once the charges are null prost, if they're simply null prost and dismissed without prejudice, they could be brought again, except for the misdemeanor. Is that right?
Yes.
So is that the Commonwealth's argument on the prejudice?
Well, the prejudice, I mean, we really don't have a lot of case law on the prejudice. I mean, it's not simply, I mean, they null prost these charges and they have to bring them again. There's some expense into re-indicting someone. I mean, I think there is, given the passage of time, some prejudice to the Commonwealth in having to relocate the witnesses and re-indict someone on these other charges. So that I guess that would be the prejudice argument that the Commonwealth would put forth. I mean, it's something that the trial court considered. I don't think it was an overriding concern, but based on the case law, the court was properly considered the prejudice that to the Commonwealth. But it also considered the other two prongs.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Answer no other questions. I just asked. Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry, are there any other questions? None from me, thank you.
No further questions.
Very good, thank you, Mr. Campbell. If there is nothing additional, then this case will, of course, be submitted to the court, and I would like to thank both of you for this argument via telephone conference. I know that there was an issue that occurred in reference to some health issues for one of the attorneys, and I certainly want to state that we appreciate the parties being able to accomplish.